Alright, time for another DoNutGuide.com video presentation. So, still on the economy stuff, or economics, or banking, really. And we'll just leave it there, really. It's a narrow enough subject. And, it's probably the most important part of the economy is where the money comes from to create, to build things. To make stuff that has value. Banking's part of that investing in the future kind of idea of creating the incentive capital to encourage people to do something that actually produces value. And that's the real question, is the value of what is produced. So the modern mystic is the same old argument in the sense it comes back always to something like, it's the Fed, people just, they're printing money. No, they're really not. He says the same old story. Yeah, well, it's the same old story from you, your side of this argument, that somehow fractional reserve banking is the problem, that somehow banks are making or printing money when they can't really do that as a either practically for more than a month or two so in the practical sense they can't do it and even for their own functionality they can't just print the money because they do have to actually produce the money when the other bank cashes their checks. So unless they send out checks that they have some sort of reason to believe will never be cashed, they do have to have the money. They can't just print it. They don't have a printing press. So I guess we'll just get to the fractional reserve banking argument. But here I'll play the clip from the Modern Mystic, where he's basically just blaming banks for printing money, and they can't print money.
The world's reserve currency is.
Oops, I can't hear that at all. All right, we're gonna go a little higher than that.
The big thing point is that whatever it is, the banks will just say, "Okay, we can invent them. We can make those appear out of nowhere."
All right, so they can't make a U.S. dollar appear out of nowhere. So even if it's some little crappy foreign bank, that just got invented. Mr. Rich Man, rich foreigner, makes a bank, writes out a formal check. The check has to be cash, loans a guy $10 trillion in U.S. currency. Well, he has to go cash the check at some other bank, And the other bank is going to require him to have the money. So it's stupid to say the bank can just print it because it can't. It has to pay the other bank the money. So it has to have the money or it has to be able to get the money. So even if the rich guy has $10 trillion in euros and the check is cashed, it has to make a deal with the other bank that cashes the check and say, okay, we'll take euros, we don't care. Yeah, that'll be fine. I'm just saying that the point is that the exchange is going to have to be made with some kind of, they have to have real capital, so to speak, in terms of trustworthiness or whatever, in the sense that they have to make agreements to be able to cash checks. So it's just stupid to say any bank can just print money because it can't. It's going to have to, the other banks are going to notice if their checks don't cash, if they don't end up being transferred in the Federal Reserve from one account to the other account and there's no money in the account. You can't have no money in your reserve account. All right. But again, the point really is fractional reserve banking, which we'll get to.
Let's go. And they will continue to get their huge bonuses from creating money out of nothing.
All right, so they can't do that. It's just physically impossible for them to print the money. So they can't create it out of nothing. They do have to be able to produce it. So if they do a whole bunch of loaning, but they don't do any capitalizing, that is, they don't take in any money, They're not going to be in business very long because the other banks are going to realize their checks don't cash.
That is the big thing point. Not that it's a big thing.
So it's not a big thing point because the banks don't have printing presses. The banks can't make currency. There's a certain amount of currency in circulation, and the federal government, the U.S. government, prints it. They're the only people that print it. They're the only people that make it, and it has to go through them to go into your account. You can't have the money until the government gives you the money, and the government only gives you the money when you actually are entitled to the money.
Point. Except that that's always the way it's been. And I suspect...
So it's not always the way it's been. Nobody could stay in business very long. So in the past, when it was unregulated, okay, you had to just trust that the bank wasn't bankrupt. No. Yeah, you did. You had to sort of just trust that it wasn't going to go bankrupt. So you had to be kind of careful, and they had to pay you pretty good money to put your money in the bank. So you got paid pretty good interest because, frankly, it was a little bit of a trust issue and all of that crap. And so you got a premium for just allowing your money to be used to lend money to other people. But, you know, you had to trust them, and you had to trust them for reasons. They had to make a persuasive argument. They had to show you their books, maybe, you know, show you that they have a bunch of really good loans, not a bunch of really shitty loans.
Always the way it will be.
So it's more bullshit. It's completely different than it was. You know, the system now is very corrupt, okay, because of the fact that the Federal Reserve is now being used to for the U.S. government to borrow essentially money, and that's a really bad idea. But clearly the regulations that were put in place in the 30s and 40s did a lot to change the system after the Depression, because a lot of shenanigans went on in the Depression, a lot of marginalized buying, a lot of what do they call it? Well, I'll think of the word when I pause to switch the video. Okay. Guess that's it. All right, so you're not saying anything. You're not proving anybody has a printing press. You're not proving they increased the amount of currency in circulation. You're not doing any of that. The checks have to be cashed. The checks don't go uncashed, and they're cashed in real reserve notes. Real reserve notes go from one bank to another bank. Fact. Can't happen any other way. Even if it's a foreign bank, okay, the fact is the foreign bank has to pay the American bank in real dollars. It has to transfer an IOU that means something. Can't be just an IOU that means nothing. All right. So we'll explain and such. All right, I guess the way to approach is to understand the difference between, let's just say you have $1 million, you're a rich person, okay, and you have $1 million, all right, and you're going to now go into the banking business. Now, if you were unregulated, nobody was telling you what to do, all right, you could just take your $1 million of cash, and you could send it out to people, okay, that you trusted. They had a good idea, okay? They wanted to invent an airplane, or they wanted to do this, or they wanted to do that, and it sounded like a good idea, and that you were basically being a venture capitalist. You really weren't being a bank. You're just really saying, I'm going to invest in what people want to do, because I think, you know, even if I give $250,000 to four different people, okay, that one of them will have a good idea and I'll own a piece of it, so to speak. Okay, like I could have a 50-50 deal or a 30-50 deal, whatever, 30-70 deal, and I'm going to make money on one of these deals. And so even if I lose this and I lose this and I lose this, I'll win this for $10 million. So I'll be way ahead anyway. Now, that could be called banking. All right, in the old days, it might have been what banking was, frankly. All right, so in a regulated system, when they say the gold standard or reserve banking, what they're really saying is you have $1 million and the obligation, like when we're on a gold standard, The obligation was for every dollar going out, you had to put a dollar in the vault. So to loan your money, you could only loan $500,000 because you had to keep $500,000. For every dollar that went out, you had to put a dollar in here. So that's reserve banking. Reserve banking just means you have to have a dollar to loan a dollar. So you're really just loaning, it's costing you $2 of what you must own to loan $1. And so you can understand it. Well, that's kind of inefficient because this is just dead. Okay, half your money can't be used to do business. So you're basically saying, I'm going to buy a building and to do my business in, or a warehouse, and I can only use half the warehouse. The other half has to just stay empty. I mean, so obviously full reserve banking is really inefficient because the bank can't lend the money. Now, the game is that what fixes, what fixes the problem is the idea of having collateral. So if somebody comes to you and asks for money and they actually give you the deed to something of real value, okay, so they want a loan, okay, so they can go buy a pig, and they give you a sheep, that you can put it in your vault. They give you some collateral, so you're kind of guaranteed that I can't lose. So even if whatever his idea is, and he fails, and he can't pay back the money, I'm okay because I got this collateral that's worth the same thing as I sent out, or worth more. So like mortgages would make a lot of sense in some sense because, yeah, you send out the money. Okay, you give somebody a $350,000 loan, let's say, for a house. And they have to give you a down payment. So they give you a down payment of, say, $50,000. So you have $400,000. You're giving out the $350,000 to pay the balance, and they already paid $50,000. So you're taking in a $400,000. Okay, in collateral. You have the deed to the house that's worth $350,000, that's worth $400,000. All right. And you're only giving out $350,000. So you're loaning $350,000. All right. You're taking the other guy's $50,000. So you're really only loaning $300,000. Plus you have the deed to the house. So it's a secured loan. All right, and now you're going to collect interest. 6% interest, which is, pretty good interest. You're getting on a deal that's pretty secure. But it was only secure when we lived in a world where housing prices were stable, where it wasn't doing this shit, So when it's doing this shit, if housing prices are going to crash every 10 years, okay, you can almost mark it on a chart, there's a big problem because now your collateral is diminishing in value, okay? It's fluctuating too much. So, you could almost make this a comparison to buying some other country's currency, right? You could buy euros, okay? And you could make a secured loan in euros or something. And you're really just investing in whether the euro is going to stay at this value that you took in. So somebody gives you the money and you give them dollars. So they give you $400,000 in euros. You give them $350,000 in dollars, okay, and you just have to hope that the euros stay worth $400,000 or even increase in value. So traditionally, you could sort of count on prices going up for the commodities of houses. All right, so there's two subjects, right? There's this idea of having reserves really doesn't make much sense if what you're doing is taking in collateral. So that's why they had, 30 years ago, they had two standards. You were either an investment bank or you were a savings and loan kind of bank. Okay, and so the regulatory standards for the two banks were different because obviously the savings and loans are taking in real assets, and in a sense, as long as the economy stays reasonably stable, they can't really lose any money. Because in a sense, after 10 years, they're going to even have more of a higher profit here, right? They're keeping, you know, this guy's only paying back the interest. He doesn't ever re-own his house again until he's already paid twice as much for it. So they're going to get back the $400,000 in cash plus another $400,000, you could almost argue, right? The guy's going to pay double what he paid for it. You know, because this 6% is every year. The premium he's going to get paid, okay, is going to be coming in every year, and essentially the person's going to pay twice. So, you know, in a sense, you know, after 5 years, you've made a huge profit off half your loans already, okay, without the fact that the value of the house might even be increasing, okay, as it did for 70 straight years since the Great Depression. So, I mean, you couldn't really lose buying real estate. If Trump would have just kept the real estate he inherited, he would have been a real multi-billionaire, okay, instead of a conniving millionaire, you know, because it's that secure, it's that guaranteed to make money. So this makes no sense to have reserve banking when you're taking in collateral. Okay, the reserve would just be dead money. It would kill the velocity, okay, of your currency. It would just make it less effective, and there's no point in doing that. It would mean that fewer people could get loans, okay, if you had full reserve banking, like half as many people. So only half the number of people get a loan would be able to get a loan. And they'd have to pay a higher price because they'd have to bid for it. You know, they'd have to, you know, loaners would be in short supply. The people giving the money is in shorter supply, and they could force you to pay a higher price for their services. So this isn't about fractional reserve banking. It's about the fact that there's two different kinds of loans. There's a secured loan and an unsecured loan. Now, the problem now is that houses aren't secure anymore, okay? So because of the fact that it's a bubble economies, because you give away the loans too easily, the person invests too little in the house who's buying it, and you're giving them a huge amount of money. So the fact is these low down payments are what's a real problem. Because now the person has no reason to be committed to the loan. And if you don't put them in jail when they default on the loan, then they don't have much of a threat against them. Because they can just file for bankruptcy even, you know, and just say, forget it, I can't pay it. I won't pay it. You know, whatever they want to say. And then the bank can lose a lot of money if the house value is really only $200,000 and not $400,000. But again, it takes time for those loans to be bad loans. It takes, you know, you'd have to make, all of your loans would have to be very short-term loans. You'd have to have a high volume of loans in a short number of years for all the money you made in the previous 5 years to mean nothing. So that's another problem here, is that the banks aren't obligated to secure themselves. They're just profit engines. The people keep siphoning the profits out, and none of the money goes into protecting the bank against the fact that it might have a bad year. All right, because it's only one bad year. Like I said, even though these loans aren't very sensible, the fact is, as long as people are paying them, you know, paying the premiums, they're making a huge amount of money. And that huge amount of money should go into some slush. They should have some defense against when things start to go bad. And then they can close the loaning door, okay, and say, I'm not loaning money at any percentage unless somebody's paying, you know, a substantial down payment. So the person's highly invested in, you know, in the sense that they're not going to get their money back if they default on the loan. So you have to have them, they have to have some kind of, skin in the game. So it's the low skin loans that are the real problem. And especially the loans like to the rich. The rich, just some rich guy says, I'm a millionaire. I own a mansion and a yacht. Give me $1 million. And they don't secure the loan. I mean, I don't even know how they get away with that. But, you know, obviously that's shenanigans or cheating. if some loan officer at Deutsche Bank gives somebody millions of dollars to invest in some project and they don't secure the loan with any kind of document that says they're entitled to some sort of real asset. Now, you could argue that, I don't want to use Trump as an example for everything, but obviously Trump played that game. Somehow he snookered banks in some sort of deal where the paper the collateral he gave them was garbage, and somehow they didn't know it, which is, I don't really understand. So they gave him a bunch of unsecured money, okay, that he can't pay back, and he just says, I'm not paying you back, and I'll pay you back 10%, every 10 years or something. So he gets some great deal because the bank has no incentive of getting zero from him by bankrupting him. So they say, okay, we'll accept $5 a month for 670 years, or some kind of stupid deal where they're only getting half their money back or a quarter of their money back or a tenth of their money back because somehow they didn't secure the loan. And that's the part where you just can't figure out how they got away with that. how the bank was stupid enough to take, whatever it was, whatever he gave them as collateral that was so useless that they couldn't use it against him. All right, well, anyway, but that's, I'm just saying, just understand when you talk about reserve banking, just understand how stupid it is. That if the government, every time the government was going to do some project, like was going to build a dam, and so it was going to spend some money out into the economy, it had to put the same amount of money in a vault, then it has to tax you to put the money in the vault. So just understand that, let's say the federal government was the bank, okay? And the federal government taxed us, okay, to create the capital to loan money, all right? Well, you'd understand that you'd really hate being taxed twice as much just to put gold bars in a box, buried somewhere in the country, right? Fort Knox or whatever. You'd be like, what? You're going to tax me, 10%, and you're going to put 5% of those taxes, you're going to put them in a hole in the ground? I mean, you'd say that's stupid, okay? Just tax me the 5%, all right, and use the money in the economy, okay? Don't tax me 10% just so you can put half the money in a frickin' hole in the ground. You wouldn't be too confident that that's very smart. Certainly, if you were a banker, you wouldn't see any wisdom in keeping a bunch of gold bars in the back room, okay? What if crooks come in and steal all the money? I mean, you really wouldn't want the capital just sitting there, this reserve capital. And what you'd really want is a bunch of deeds you could put in a small little safe, okay, that were worth a lot of money, that are real ownership of the Empire State Building, and ownership of this, and ownership of real assets. That's what you'd want, okay, to have in the vault in Fort Knox, is a bunch of deeds saying you own Yellowstone Park and this and that and all this other stuff. So that's another point to make, is that the $2 trillion that the government, $2.3 trillion, that's in circulation, the government can pay that without any problem. Okay, it doesn't need reserves. So this is like borrowing money from a guy who lives in a really big house. Okay, and so you know that, well, even if the worst happens and his loans break and he's going bankrupt, he owns a big house, and so I'm going to get something back. Well, federal government has enough assets to pay out $2.3 trillion. It could sell Yellowstone, it could sell this, it could sell that. So, yeah, it can cover this amount of money. Okay, it has an obligation to produce. So even if all of those dollars go bad somehow, and it has to produce 2.3 trillion new dollars, it could do it. Okay, it could produce the value to sell on the markets to produce the 2.3 trillion dollars. It's just, it wouldn't take much work at all. All right, so just understand again what you're saying when you think it should be full reserve banking. Just understand that full reserve banking means much higher interest rates, and it means you're basically just saying you're going to take half the capital and kill it. Just make it incapable of doing anything productive. You're going to stick it in a vault. And it's really dumb to do that when you're trying to get people to do stuff that makes value, that makes the world have more stuff in it worth more money. Okay, you're trying to make and build things that have value, that are productive, that are innovative, that create productivity. All of that has to be financed somehow into the future. And the only people who can invest in the future are people that have the extra capital. All right. I mean, I'd like to do it, okay? I'd like to get into the banking business. But, yeah, first you have to make money to make money, unfortunately. But it's really just about collateral. And the real subject is the major thing being bought are housing and buildings and new construction and all that kind of stuff. And if you don't regulate how that's produced, then you can have, you know, you have a real problem because your markets can crash. And if the markets, if those commodity market, if those, yeah, it's a commodity housing. If that market crashes, and you know, if that corn prices, if you have all of the stuff that you have deeds for corn, okay, and corn prices drop by 50%, obviously, okay, your what you've collateralized on your loans isn't worth it anymore. And even though you're making profit on those loans, the people who have the loans outstanding aren't going to have an incentive to pay them back if they don't own any part of that corn anymore. Okay. If they're not going to lose any money by stopping payment because the value of the thing they were buying isn't worth anything anymore. Point. All right. So I'll read a couple of comments and they're basically saying this, making the same argument, blah, blah, blah. All right. So should be back. All right. Regarding cash money, you think people are taking out reserve mortgages? Yeah. So again, it's called buying on margin. So people do it all the time. They borrow the money to buy stock. Happens all the time. All right. It's, what do they call it? That's another word for it. I'll pause. Ah, ironically. Leverage. Yeah, it's called leverage. All right, you take, you know, the little bit and you make a big bit out of the little bit by you know, by basically just borrowing. So people put in $10,000 and of real money, and connected to that $10,000 is a loan of $100,000, you know. And so they're making their investment higher than it actually is because somebody's willing, for every $10,000 they put in, they're willing to essentially lend them another $50,000. All right. So yes, the whole stock market has been leveraged, okay, in terms of its value. The old stock market, again, it was, you know, kind of known that, you know, people couldn't pay the money they had borrowed in the market. So when their stocks crashed, the problem was is they had a whole bunch of outstanding loans that purchased the stock. They didn't purchase the stock with cash. They purchased the stock with margins, with borrowed money. All right. taking out reserve mortgages on their houses or even boats to and making investments. Of course, you don't think Donald Trump has mortgaged everything he owns to some bank somewhere at some point somewhere, that every bit of it is debt. It really isn't owned by Trump. Come on, you don't get that. He says it overtly. This is how the rich get rich. I mean, he'll tell you. It's probably in his book, you retard. You capitalize. You turn into capital what you own. You make it into money so you can spend it and make more money. You can invest it, so to speak. You show me someone making a reserve mortgage on their house to buy bonds with. Okay, I'll show you, like I said, a Trump who will sit there and mortgage his Trump Tower, okay, to build other buildings. So it happens all the time. All right. Now, whether they buy bonds, again, the bond buying is by the banks because it's a no-lose proposition. They don't have to invest any capital to buy the bonds because the government gives them an automatic buy. They don't have to worry. It's not going to be on their reserve accounts. It's not going to be on their accounts are going to show the ownership of the bond as irrelevant because it won't be shown as a debt. It'll be shown as an asset. Okay, so the banks totally win by owning, bonds as long as their checks aren't going to get cashed. So as long as they can buy them without having the check being cashed, they'll buy them. So that's the game the government has created. So they own bonds without it costing them anything. And you can understand how somebody like, anybody could do it. All right? I mean, in this current economy, especially the way the stock market's been for the last 20 years, gigantic increases, right? Over the 20-year span, huge, giant profit, to more than 10% a year. So you borrow the money, okay, at 3%. To buy the bond, okay, because you'll get it, well, that's 6%, let's say. So so half of the price of the bond will be paid by the interest you'll get on the bond. You'll get 3% interest. So you're only paying 3% interest to borrow the money to buy the bond. So if I just get the money from a bank, buy a bond with it, I'll only pay 3% interest, and I can make 10% in the stock market with the money. You don't get how that works? Now I can take the same money and just keep reinvesting it by putting bonds in the bank. I can spend $1 million, then I can spend another $1 million, then I can spend another $1 million, put all that stock in the bank as my owned collateral. The bank has the deed to it, but I can have it anytime I want to buy it back out. I paid $1 million for the stock. Now the stock's worth $1.5 million. You don't see how I'm making huge amounts of money? Oh, fuck. Well, you're just too stupid then. All right, reserve mortgage on their house to buy bonds. I don't think you know what you're talking about. Well, I don't think you are paying much attention because it seems if you were rich, I'm sure you would play the game, okay? Because it's too obvious. Borrow money at 3%. Okay, and I know I can, in a year from now, I'm going to get 10%. I've got a net profit of 7% on the money. Why the hell wouldn't I do it? Why wouldn't the hell wouldn't I mortgage my house for that? All right. All right, cash money. Let's see. By defect. I think I wanted to say default in the video, but whatever. Obviously, the system has little defects in it, okay? And the banksters are taking advantage of those defects. You want inflation so people won't put money in their mattresses because that causes inflation? No. It causes the potential for big rebound inflation. The point is you don't want volatility in your cash. You want your cash to stay stable and the same price. So you don't want anybody to be able to corner the market, okay, to do shenanigans like they did with gold. I mean, gold is full of shenanigans, especially in the past, because the rich people, some one rich person would buy a ton of gold, drive the prices way up, get a bunch of suckers into the market, and then sell out and make a huge profit. All right, so it's manipulatable. So you don't want that to happen to cash. You don't want the cash to in any way, you don't want to encourage any investment in the future increase in the value of the cash. So you want it to have, you want to have it a stable price, and the stable price would be a little tiny bit of inflation. So obviously I'm saying yes, you invest in a little bit of inflation to prevent big inflation. That's what you're doing. You're paying a small bad taste price for a cure of a disease. You can't even figure that out. All right, so again he says, what you were saying about money supply is incorrect. Well, no, it's not. The government prints the money and the banks have to essentially buy it from the Fed, okay? They can't just take any amount of money they want and say it's their money, blah, 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 blah. That doesn't happen. They just don't walk up to the federal government and say, I just loaned a whole bunch of money, please give it to me. No, they can't do that. All right, banks generate money when they make loans. So again, they don't generate anything, okay? It's all transfers. They have to take it out of the economy. They have to charge somebody interest, okay, and collect it from the worker who goes to work every day and then pays the bank their profit. Nothing is generated. They don't print money. They don't do any of that crap. It's just a lie, and it's a convenient one for you idiots, okay? This is just a religion for you. You know, that's all this is. You're not paying any attention to how it really works. All right. Make loans because fractional reserve banking. So that's the key statement. Okay. This is, you know, there's fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with fractional reserve banking if the bank is a savings and loan, for example. It makes perfectly good sense not to have a big giant pile of money in the vault. Okay. Have 10%. Have 2% even, because you only have to deal with little fluctuations in the markets. All right, but if you're loaning money that's unsecured, so if you're doing a bunch of loaning that's more like venture capitalism, well then yeah, you need a bigger insurance fund, you need a bigger rainy day fund. Okay, so you know, again, how much do you want to pay for your insurance, for example? You really want to go to an insurance company that charges you essentially twice as much because for every dollar they insure, they have to put a dollar in a vault somewhere to be able to be perfectly capable of paying out on every single policy. So if every single policy went bad, they would have to have enough reserve capital to pay off every single policy. No, you'd rationally say, well, the worst case scenario, half the policies are money losers, or three quarters are money losers. You'd say they only need to have enough capital to pay off if there's like an earthquake and a volcano and a blah blah blah, you know, all of this stuff at once, you know, some sort of worst case scenario that's in the realm of reasonable. But a worst case scenario where every single house has flood damage and every single house burns down and every single house, you know, that you would pay a huge price for your insurance then. You know, you wouldn't buy the insurance because it wouldn't be worth it anymore. Because you've broken the whole idea of insurance, which is, oh, it only happens to one in a thousand houses, or one in 10,000. So the whole reason why you're buying insurance is, the only way insurance makes any sense is because you're covering yourself against a very low risk. If they had to capitalize, if they had to have enough money to pay off for 10,000 houses, okay, and only one is going to burn down, you can't see how preposterously inefficient that would be? All right. So, fuck you. You're an idiot. I mean, that probably goes for all of you. I mean, there's nobody with a working brain on this planet. This is not complicated enough for all of this stupid, crazy shit talking that people do. Again, there's absolutely no evidence a bank can write any check it wants to for any amount. It can't, because the other banks are the ones going to cash the check. You know, and even if they write the check to Joe, and then Jim comes back to exactly the same bank with the check and says, give me my $1 million, they obviously have to have the money. So they obviously, even if they don't have it in their vault, they have to say, well, look, to some other bank, they have to say, look, I have a deed to Trump's Tower, right? It's got to be worth a few $1 million. I'll give you that. And the other bank will give them the money because they'll make a collateralized loan. They have to borrow the money from some other bank if they don't have the money. So let's not pretend that they don't have to produce the asset. Of course they have to produce it. And they're going to have to produce it now, not 500 years from now. So the banks will regulate the banks. The other banks will tell the bank that, you know, fuck you, you got to pay the money. I mean, so it's just nonsense to think they can just print and they can just make an unlimited number of loans. They can't, okay? They have to have enough capital to make the loan. And the real question is whether you think they should have twice as much capital to make the loan. So if I'm going to go into the banking business, again, you're saying, well, if I have $1 million, I can only loan $500,000 because I have to keep reserves to pay to in case all my loans go bad, every single one of them. And I'm saying to you, that's not going to be very efficient banking, and you're going to pay higher interest rates if that's what you make the banks do. All right. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. That's really enough of a video. Yeah, I'll declare it so anyway. So, till the next time and such, this has been a DoNotGuide.com video presentation. To idiots. I'm presenting it to the idiots of the world. Kind of like it's, you know, it's about as inefficient as full reserve banking. I mean, talking to low reserve brains.